You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it. You're in the right place. If you've got questions, we've got answers. That's what we do here. We take your calls. We answer your questions about everything trucking. Many times, if I don't have an answer for you, somebody else listening will help us out, or I will go find the answer. It's one of the things I love to do. I love to do research. And one of the things that I've been doing a lot of research about lately is health. And there is some amazing new data about health. Now, I would love to talk about it more, but I realize that this isn't a health show. It's a trucking show. I will talk about it occasionally because it affects every single thing we do. You can't run a successful business or a successful life if you're not healthy. But we also have Kim's podcast every Friday afternoon where we can dive much deeper into those topics. So check that out as well. The best way to find our podcast schedules and phone numbers is right on the website at letstruck.com. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to jump right into some phone calls today. We are going to head off to Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call today.
You're welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to thank you for turning me on to The War of Art. Great book. I can't thank you enough. And I'm kind of kicking myself because I've had it downloaded into my tablet for about 6 months. And I finally just read it this week. And I'm actually on it the third time through. It's amazing.
He is such a great storyteller. And, you know, that book was recommended to me by Larry Wingett. And I remember exactly, this was way back when we first started the radio show. We were still in Colorado and we got Larry on the show for the first time. And he did a great interview, gave us a bunch of good information. And at the very end, I just said, "Hey, Larry, I know you read a lot. You know, what book should I be reading right now?" And he said, The War of Art. And I thought, first of The Art of War, which is a classic book about war and strategy. And he said, "No, the War of Art." And I said, I'll go look for it. And I looked for it. When you read the description, it's about writing. And I thought, I'm not sure why he would recommend that book to me. I wasn't even thinking about writing anything back then. Yeah, and I thought, if he recommended it, I'm going to go read it. And even though he talks about how it affected his writing because he's a writer, it is an absolute lesson for all of us in life.
Oh, I agree. I think that when I listen to it, time he uses writing, I replace that with business and trucking in my mind and kind of block the word writing out. And everything he says can be transferred into any type of business, into anything in your life, if you just transfer, you know, one word, change one word for another. And honestly, for me, I got a lot more out of it the second time than I did the first time, and I'm getting even more out of it the third time around. And I think that this will probably be a book that I'll go back to multiple times over the next couple of months, because I don't know, maybe I'm getting more out of it than other people, or I'm getting something different out of it than even you did. The way that I saw it was, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say probably there's so much meat there in the book. I mean, it's so deep and you really have to work through it that there are probably multiple messages. I'll tell you real quick what I always go back to, and I should probably read it again because it's been several years. It was when we were still in Colorado, and I've gone back to it and reviewed it a couple times, but I should probably read it from start to finish. He has another book similar called Do the Work. So you might want to check that one out as well. It's more of a condensed version of how to take the lessons that he talks about in The War of Art and just apply them to everyday life. And the one that always sticks in my mind is the idea of the resistance. I mean, if I think about the book, that's what always comes to mind. And I see it, but when I see it, because I understand it now, I don't give up anymore. And I used to. And you know, the idea is that the bigger the project you take on, and I don't want to say bigger in the wrong way, the more important. It doesn't have to be big in scale, but you know, we've been talking a lot about health. So the idea of radically changing your health, even if it only applies to you, it to me is a very, very big thing. Doesn't have to involve anybody else, but that is a big thing in your life. And the bigger and the more important the thing that you're trying to do is, the stronger the resistance will be against you. And I've been seeing that so much in the last 6 months. I've been making these radical changes in the way I eat and, you know, so many other things, and I see the resistance is just like, it's crazy. But the good news is now I look at it and go, yeah, I know it's going to come. I expect it, and I just have to work through it.
Well, you know, it's funny that you use the health analogy, because that's really where I've used the lessons in the book over the last handful of days, because I'm trying to make some pretty big differences in my diet. And of course, I'm meeting a lot of resistance. And, you know, you go back and you listen to all the different examples of resistance that he gives. And he gives so many different examples, you're bound to find something that works for you and is directly correlated to what you're trying to do. It's funny that you mentioned that.
Yeah, things like, you know, it's hard to describe it. You really have to listen to the book because he goes so in depth into these things. But the things like the behavior of the people around you will change and create resistance, and circumstances will change and create resistance. You know, I look at this trip I just took, and how difficult it was. We're on the road for almost 4 months, and so many things went wrong on the trip. I mean, I blew an engine in a truck. I've never done that. In all the trucks I've owned over all these years, I've never put a rod through the block. In fact, I've never had a catastrophic engine failure on the road, ever. All I ever do is get to a certain point, decide to rebuild trucks. I've been doing that for years. Never had a single catastrophic engine failure. Will happen now. And that made my health challenge that much more difficult. I was set up in the RV so that I had my daily routine. I was sticking to it. And all of a sudden I have to move completely out of the RV and I had to start all over again. You know, I had to find a way to get all those things in a hotel room that I had with me and keep doing what I was doing. And I could go through so many examples of the resistance I faced on this trip. But the most amazing part for me this time is, no matter how bad the resistance got, I just got up every day and said, I don't care. I'm just going to keep doing what I know is the right thing to do.
Well, let me ask you a question, Kevin. When you were facing the challenges that you were facing on your road trip, did you find that the resistance made them more important? Did you find that you actually found the power within you and the energy to dig in that much deeper because the resistance was that much more unsurmountable feeling?
Yes and no. And what I mean by that is, had I not read the book and had I not understood the concept of the resistance, even though the health changes were important to me, they've been important to me other times in my life. and I haven't followed through the way that I know I should, or other projects that I've tried and I didn't follow through, the resistance happens and I would give up. I mean, the resistance would beat me. But now, because I understand it, I guess what your question, did it make it more important? Yeah, I committed and I made the change so important in my mind that the resistance can't beat me. No matter what happens, I will make that change the number one priority in my day until I get through this. And the good news is, the more you push through that resistance, it's just like anything else, like weight training. The more you push through the resistance, the stronger you get and the easier it all becomes.
I'm totally picking up what you're putting down. Thank you.
Great stuff. Thanks for the call. Let's get to a break. We're going to come right back and get to your phone calls. Stick around. The website is letstruck.com. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Speaking of my engine and the truck is still in Alabama. The RV is in Kansas City. We are finally back home in Oregon. Just back a couple days now. It's wonderful to be home after being on the road for so long. And you know, when I look back, all the challenges of being on the road, trying to stay healthy, trying to keep the business going, putting on a very, very large event, our week-long CMC. In the middle of that, prior to that, we had the biggest truck show of the year in Louisville. But, it's to go through that. It shows you that no matter what the circumstances are, we can get through them. And you just stick to what you know and do what works and do the hard work. That's what the book's all about. While I was talking about the truck, a picture popped up on my text message from David Counts down at Fleet Air Filter, which is where the truck is. And it's a picture of my new engine sitting on a stand, completely assembled with the message that it's going back in the truck tomorrow. So I imagine within a week or so at the outside, I told him not to hurry now. We're home. Do the job right. We'll get everything else done I want done on the truck, and I'll start making arrangements to head back across the country again, get the truck, get the trailer, get it all back here to Oregon, where we're going to settle down for the summer and get some big projects taken care of. Let's head off to New Jersey. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Kevin? How are you doing today?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
Two things, Kevin. I've been in business for almost 2 years. I started my career here in New Jersey working for a container company. That's all I ever done. That's all I know. After being a company driver for 6 months, I went on my own. Bought a nice Freightliner Classic 2003. You know, it was just overhauled. It was a little rough on the outside, but, you know, but the engine and the transmission, which it was excellent. That's what was concerning me most. And now I'm at the point where my authority is going to become active in 2 or 3 weeks. I decided to run because, I mean, I think it's pretty good. I like the type of work. And, you know, and that's that. And, but I had an issue. I was talking to a salesman this morning because I was looking to get a truck. in order for me to go on the road doing my story, right? And I was going to let my brother running the Freightliner, the Classic, at the container company where I'm currently an owner-operator. I work with them. They've been nothing but good to me, and the money is okay because that's the work that I do.
Okay.
And I've been profitable because I've done a lot to the truck, fixed for power box, the turbo, the intake manifold, fast, the OPS one oil system, which is, I think, was a waste of time because I baby my truck so much that I changed the oil every 10,000 miles on metal truck because I'm scared.
Well, you're keeping it very, very clean then. With the OPS and changing it, you have the cleanest oil around.
I do, and I think it was a waste of time because, I mean, you know, the system, but I don't care. I mean, I'm so concerned about the life of the truck and the truck being the best that it could be that I don't care, you know, if I do it, because that's all tax deductible. But this morning I told this salesman, I was looking for another Freightliner Classic or something else, and then he was telling me that you're going to go get your own authority and you're going to roll broker all these loads. You might want, you know, you guys are not going to have much time running all the trucks. Oh, and I know what you do. You do it for the pre-emissions. I understand that. But I had a customer. He said he had a customer that had an FLD 120, and he had his own authority, his trailer and everything. And he used to do loads from Texas back up to New Jersey or whatever it was. And then he had to get rid of the truck, and the truck was so perfect. And the show was in, the truck was like in show condition. But he had to get rid of the truck because his broker apparently told him that he had an old truck, and the insurance company, they insured the loads for the broker, not the insurance company, that we as the business owners have to have, which is $1 million on the truck and trailer and $100,000 cargo, which is the standard. They said that, you know, if you don't have a certain year model truck, that you cannot broker this load thing, and then the broker cannot give you the load.
Hey, I have one word for them. Bullshit.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, because I was like so concerned because my authority is coming up. I finally spoke to Rico yesterday. He was so great with all the advice that he gave me. And I actually ended up getting a contract with HMN Bay, which are right down in Maryland. I could pick up a load here in Elizabeth, New Jersey, down in Maryland, pick up their loads down in Florida, and pick up another load from Florida, where they have a huge warehouse, coming back up to New Jersey or whatever it is. And I was, you know, and I negotiated my first load for $275 a mile. You know what I mean? I was so concerned.
I'm standing here almost furious. I would fire that broker so fast, and I would tell everybody I knew what a freaking idiot they are. And what a horrible way to run a business, and to use threats like that when they don't even understand the issues and then blame it on the insurance company. Go find a new insurance company. There's hundreds of them. Go find a new customer. There's 10,000, 100,000 customers out there. So there is no way I would ever go through the pain and cost and risk of upgrading trucks when we know the old trucks work well. We have tons of free. We know how to fix them. We get good fuel economy out of them. Our costs are low. We have no risk. I would tell those people to go. I'll just stop there, but that is sanity. And like I say, I would fire everybody involved and I would just move on because there's so much freight, so many brokers, so many customers, so many insurance companies who don't think that way, that I would just stop doing business with those people in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I mean, but this was actually, the salesman at Arrow Truck in Elizabeth, New Jersey was telling me this because I called him this morning.
Well,
let's information on a classic that he had in there, and the Freightliner Classic. I love Freightliner Classic.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we always have to do when we're listening to other people talk is we have to remember their perspective. First of all, he knows next to, even though he sells trucks, I deal with these guys. I've been dealing with them for 30 years. These guys know next to nothing about operating a truck on the road. They know next to nothing about truck specs. They don't understand gearing. They don't understand fuel economy. They sell trucks. And in my opinion, most of them, not all of them, but most of them do a very poor job of doing that because they don't do the homework to understand what they're selling. he's repeating some story he heard. Who knows if he even heard it secondhand or third hand? It's like the game of telephone, so we don't even know if the story's right. He shouldn't be repeating it because he doesn't understand it. But his perspective is he wants to sell you the most expensive truck he can convince you to buy.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, like I said, my authority is going to be active in 2 or 3 weeks. I already signed my contract with HMNB. I'm going to start getting their loads. And I made the decision to go on business with my brother. He's going to stay in Jersey running the container company work for me while I go on the road, because I have a little bit more experience. He's only been driver for 6 months. So this type of work, the container company, where we go from Hillside, New Jersey to Rochester, New York, every day and back. We do all those trips. In my freightliner, and I know I should be running a little bit different. I run 65 to 70, but it's because of the hours. If I was to run 60 to 65, I would run out of hours. You know what I mean?
And sometimes in the short haul, you have to make decisions like that. Just make sure you're paying attention to the numbers, seeing if you can, you know, make it another way. The other thing I would really encourage you to do, especially going over the road, is skip the classic. Go get an aerodynamic truck. It's going to be another $10,000 a year in fuel cost in your pocket if you do that. But congratulations on the authority. Congratulations on controlling and growing the company. And like I say, salespeople, brokers like that, fire them all. I wouldn't work with any of those people. Let's go to New York. Charles, welcome to the program. Uh-oh, Charles, you're really breaking up. Are you there? Oh, boy. Charles, you know what? I'm going to put you back on hold, and we're going to see if we can save that line. I'll try to come back to you. We're coming up on a break, so I'll take us into the break, and then when we get back, we'll get to some more calls and questions. I need to calm down. My blood pressure got a little high there. I'm pretty calm and laid back most of the time, but ignorance makes me crazy. And ignorance is different than stupidity. I think that people are inherently smart, but they can be lazy. And laziness leads to ignorance. I just don't understand why people do a job and they don't work to understand their job better. And then they just pass on bad information. And the further the information gets down the line, the worse it gets. That kind of stuff just makes me a little crazy. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I think we might have saved the line there with Charles, so we're going to head back to New York. Charles, you with me?
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
There you go. You sound great now. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I recently incorporated in Maryland, and then I found a house in West Virginia. I was incorporated in February, and I moved in April. And I wanted to know, I formed the LLC, and I wanted to know, do I just have to start the entire process over again as though I never incorporated and formed the LLC in Maryland? Or can I carry over some of the things? Can I carry over the EIN number, or is that just state by state?
No, the EIN number is federal. So the EIN number will transfer. Now, that one I know because it is a federal number, so that transfers. The other details I don't know, because there's so many different rules in all the different states, and some states have transfer agreements and reciprocity and all kinds of crazy stuff. But this is a fairly straightforward legal question. What I would actually recommend for this, so that you get it right, I don't even want to attempt to guess at it. One of the services that I've used a couple times recently, and I'm very happy with, is these new legal services online. When you've got a simple legal question, pretty straightforward, you don't want to make an appointment, go after into an office, sit down like you traditionally do with an attorney, pay them for the fact that, you know, they unlocked the door that morning and then they charge you by the 15-second block. I mean, that's the way attorneys traditionally work. They charge you for copies. They charge you for everything. These new services online are pretty slick, and you get straightforward, clear answers to fairly simple legal questions, and the cost is minimal, and the time, you can usually do the research, find the site you want to use, ask the question, get your answer within about an hour. So all you really need to do is Google a phrase like ask an attorney, and you'll get a dozen or more websites. You can kind of go through them, see what the pricing is, see how they work. I don't really have a favorite yet. I think I used rocketlawyer.com once and it worked pretty well. But that's really the best way to answer a question like this, rather than, you know, you could call the state registrar's office. I just don't trust government employees to give me the right answer. You know, if you call Maryland and they don't understand West Virginia law, or you call West Virginia and they don't understand, and that's not their job. They're just clerks. So I would use the ask an attorney thing on the internet.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to North Dakota. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Got two questions for you. First one is profit gauges. You have a 5-truck company, but 3 of the trucks are lease operators. Is the multi-truck portion of profit gauges set up for, in a situation like that?
It is. And let me explain how it would work and whether or not it may or may not work in everybody's situation, but it is set up to handle that kind of stuff. So what you can do is you can decide, hey, I want my owner operators to track their numbers, so I'm just going to pay the $10 a month for the extra truck for them. No big deal. I'll just offer it to them as a benefit. So you pay for all 5 trucks, or you could say, hey guys, I'll make it available to you instead of you going and paying $19 a month. Since you're under my contract, we can do it for 10. Either way, it doesn't matter who pays for it. But the way you set it up then is you are the master administrator of the account. And then each truck you can assign their login so that they only see their truck. Now, you as the administrator get to see every truck under your account, but you can set up, so you could see, you know, all of yours, you can see theirs, but you could set up each individual lessee so that they only see their numbers.
Okay. And my second question was, how did the visit go at the Harris Motel and Council Bluff for the look at for the CMC?
Yeah, two words, outstanding and challenging. And I'll tell you why. The facility itself, I couldn't ask for anything better. We are going to be able to put on such an amazing event next year. We'll be running 3 parallel seminars is what we'll be doing. We'll have one lane. We're calling them different lanes. We'll have one lane for people who don't have a truck yet but want to get into the business and want to know how to do it right. So they'll go through a week of all the stuff that pertains to them. We'll have another track that is targeted for owner-operators leased to a carrier who want to know how to be as profitable as possible. We'll have a third track for people with their own authority, small carriers, people who want to build fleets, either they're already in that position or they want to be in that position. So they want to learn those things. That'll be about 60% of the material that will be targeted to those 3 lanes. About 20% of the material will be the general business stuff that I teach about success and, you know, the habits and all those other things that just apply to everybody in every business. And then about the other 20% of the material will be that anybody who owns a truck needs to know this kind of stuff, whether it's fuel mileage or maintenance or tires, those kind of things. So it gives us a chance to really cover the best material and target to all three groups. And then we can also offer breakouts in the evenings or at other time on tons of other topics, whether it's technology or health or, you know, understanding how to write spreadsheets. So we are going to be able to cram so much education into this week, and you'll be able to pick and choose what you want to get. We have enough inside space that we're bringing the whole maintenance boot camp inside, so weather won't be a factor. We're going to be doing a lot more hands-on throughout the whole week with the trucks. I don't know if we'll pull this off yet. Bruce is actually talking about building a signature engine all week long. So they'll start with the bare block. They'll show how to cut the line bores, how to cut the counter bores, all of that stuff, and then actually start building it with hands-on demonstration. And at the end of the week, have a finished engine. I think that's amazing. So we're coming up with all kinds of new ideas. We have a tremendous amount of space, perfect parking setup. So that's the outstanding part. Couldn't ask for a better facility. We're going to at least double the numbers to 500, and that's already filling up fast. But the challenging part for us is the fact that although there are lots of hotels, one attached to the property, several right there near the property, the Harrah's Hotel, which is who our contract is with, is 3 miles down the road. Now, that's challenging for us because putting on an event like this is outrageously expensive. One of the ways that we're able to keep the cost down is by contracting a certain number of hotel rooms with Harrah's. And then we get credit for all the hotel rooms that booked because Harrah's can make money on their hotel rooms. Give us a break on the space for the seminar, and we can pass that along in our seminar price, which is what we've always done. Most business seminars start at $1,000 a day. I mean, we're not even close to that. So we realized that people being 3 miles away, taking shuttles with all the long hours, we know that's going to be a challenge. So we are just busy crunching numbers and negotiating with Harrah's, trying to figure out a way that we can pull this off and everybody makes some money. So that's, but we'll do that. We'll figure out how to make this happen, and it is going to be an amazing event.
It sounds very exciting. I'd love to be there. We'll see what happens.
Well, we will we'll keep you updated. And the great thing is once we open registration, we are financing it. You only need $100 to lock up your seat, and then you can just start making payments on it. And we have even reduced the cost of that. We used to have a flat fee. Now we do it as just a straight interest charge. The sooner you pay it off, the less interest you pay. No prepayment penalties or anything like that. All right, so I'm coming up on a break, but when we get back, we're going to get to some more of your call. You know what? I'm going to jump into this call, and then we'll carry it through the break. Let's go to Wyoming. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
This book, Brain Maker. I heard you talk about it. I was just in a bookstore a couple weeks ago, and I saw it sitting there, and I thought, that sounds like that author that Kevin was talking about with that Grain Brain
right.
Book. Anyway, so I looked at it and found out, yeah, this is the one. So I read it. I swore off buying diet books a long time ago. To give you an idea, okay, I'm in my 60s. And the first diet book I read was by a guy named Yul Gibbons. You know who he is?
Yeah, Eat a Tree. Hey, hold that thought. Yeah. I'll be right back, and we'll get to your call. So hold on. Okay. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Stick around. All right, real quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour here. We're doing okay on calls and questions right now. So at the end of this segment, I'm going to say I'm done. I've got to get out of here, all that stuff. But hang around, because we're going to come right back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to Ron in Wyoming. Ron, go ahead.
Hey. So Yul Gibbons, okay. That's the first diet book I read, and now I was probably about 18 years old when I read it. And it wasn't Eat a Tree. It was one of his others. This is back like in the late 60s. Anyway, I can't get on to this don't eat any grain. We've been eating grain for thousands of years.
10,000 to be exact. But how many years did we not eat grains?
Probably not many.
Oh, 2.5 million. 2.5 million years we didn't eat grains. They didn't exist.
Okay.
You didn't know how to process.
I just can't. Okay. And then another thing about this guy, this brain maker guy, he has this thing about fruit. And now I've heard this just lately, this diet stuff about don't eat fruit. Okay.
No,
that's the dumbest diet advice you could ever give anybody.
He doesn't say don't eat fruit. Where you were listening. Now let's talk about fruit. Fruit.
Okay. Yeah. But
to us, but, let me talk and then I'll let you talk.
Okay.
Fruit. Let's look at our diet historically before civilization, before agriculture. 2.5 million years we ruled the planet and we didn't eat grains because we couldn't process them. So grains didn't exist till about 10,000 years ago, which is a second in evolution. Fruit was only available to us as a human being one time a year when it ripened in the fall. And we would eat fruit in the fall for one reason, to fatten up for winter. So fruit is not bad for you. Fruit is good for you. I eat fruit every day. He recommends it. If you would have finished the book and looked through the diet plan.
I finished the book.
He recommends it every day. He just talks about small amounts of fruit. And the
other thing to be careful of is
that our fruit today has been hybridized so much to be incredibly sweet because people like sweet. We have sweet tooth. And our fruit has been so hybridized to be incredibly sweet that the fructose is really hard on our bodies. So if you stay away from those higher fruit commercialized, the pineapples that are so sweet, they give you a toothache, that if you stick with the berries and some of the more organic fruits that aren't that high in sugar, they are incredibly healthy for you. And he says that.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. He did this whole thing with fructose, but this is, first of all, when I talk about diet, I've never dieted to lose 1 pound in my whole life. Like I said, I'm in my 60s. I've never had to lose weight. So when I read diet books, I always have to remember this. He's talking to fat people.
No, okay? He's not in this book. This book wasn't a diet book about losing weight at all. It was about brain health. It had nothing to do with losing weight. It was about brain health. That's all he talks about in the whole book.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you read the same book.
I thought what he talked about in the whole book is your microbiological system in your body. That's
exactly
what I thought the book about was about. Okay.
Because all of the new research.
And fat people have a screwed up microbiological system. One thing I learned from this book is,
when you say microbiological system, you're screwing up the word. First of all, it was microbiome, and that's a very specific word.
I'll tell you one thing I learned from this book is
that he's talking
about a friend of mine had gastric bypass surgery, and I always told him, and he dropped like 150 pounds in 2 months after he had it. And I told him, now, I don't see why you couldn't have just disciplined yourself not to eat so much and done the same thing. Well, until I read this book, I didn't understand it. It's because he had his whole microbiological system removed, and he was starting over new again. You still there?
No, somewhat. You're on the right track, but there are several reasons why people have a hard time controlling their appetite. Grains are specifically targeting the chemicals in your body that control appetite.
I know. Whenever you talk about health, I try and get through because I understand it. Okay, I get it.
So why do you eat grains then? Because you were never designed to eat grains. Cows eat grains; they have four stomachs.
I eat grain all the time. I eat grain every day.
Oh, we've been eating it for 10,000 years. Doesn't mean you're healthy. Doesn't mean you couldn't be 10 times healthier if you didn't eat it. And it doesn't necessarily.
This microbiology in your stomach, this gut stuff, is really nothing new. Okay, I don't know. One of the better diet books I ever read was called Alkalize or Die.
Oh, okay.
And it talks about the pH balance in your system. To keep the good microbes growing and the good microbes eating bad microbes.
Those books about alkalizing couldn't have been more wrong. Alkalize, when you raise the pH, more alkalinity, the bad microbes are what grow. Look at fermenting foods. We lower the pH.
That's another thing I learned from this book is the fermented foods. It's pretty good. I've tried it. I've done it,
We create an acidic environment. That's what fermented foods are. It's lactic acid. And in lactic acid, this is why it preserves the foods, because the high acidic environment allows the good bacteria to live and the bad bacteria die off. That's why you preserve these foods for months and months and months with no refrigeration, because we're allowing the good bacteria to live in the high acid environment. Alkalizing is not.
Alkalizing, it's all about the pH balance, okay? If you go through an alkalized book and this brain maker diet guy, they're very similar, okay? Alkalized guys probably recommend don't eat grains. See, I'm thinking that maybe over the 10,000 years we've been eating grain that we might have genetically adapted. The reason I think people now are having trouble with grain is because one thing, it's a fad thing, and the other thing is, I think the GMOs have a difference. Okay, that's what's new about grains is GMOs.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Most of our wheat is not GMO.
Corn, a lot of it is. Wheat was probably the first thing that they genetically modified.
No, you have hold on. You're confusing things. You have to separate hybridizing from genetically modifying. Two very different things. Wheat is heavily hybridized, meaning they cross-pollinating to create,
I get the difference. Genetically modified is they take a gene that doesn't even exist in that strain and put it in there. Like a gene from a rabbit and they put it in wheat, and that screws up the whole system. Okay?
But our wheat,
I get it.
Our corn is heavily GMO. Our soy is heavily GMO. We should absolutely not eat those foods. I call them Frankenfoods. We shouldn't be consuming them at all. But wheat has been heavily hybridized. But when you say that we've adapted in 10,000 years, that's wrong. We know that it takes hundreds of thousands of years for any organism to genetically adapt.
I know where we're going here. Okay, this is where we're getting our wires screwed up. Okay, I believe the biblical version of everything. Okay, Adam and Eve were in a garden and they were tending the garden. That's where life started. So that's why, I mean, you can tell me all this. Like I said, I've been doing this diet stuff for a long time, and I've never had to lose weight. And one thing I never do under any circumstances is I never set foot in a gym. Okay.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I don't know how, and I got to cut you loose. Really. I'd keep talking about it. It's a great conversation, but the music is playing and I am really out of time. I don't see anything wrong with gyms. They're not necessary. We can get exercise and physical fitness without that, but this isn't about fat. It's so much more than that. Fat is just one symptom of a very, very unhealthy diet. Just one symptom. Thanks for joining me. I'm all out of time. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe, be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started on a second hour here.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome back, or welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls. We answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health. You name it. We talk about it here on the air. Anything goes. You bring me a question, I'll do my best to get you an answer. I don't know it. Maybe somebody listening can help us out. And if we don't figure it out at all, I'll go see if I can do the research and come up with an answer. So we are going to get right back to, or we're going to get right to some phone calls today. We're going to get started in Pennsylvania. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call today.
You're welcome. What can I help you with?
A question regarding brakes. I've got a Kenworth T680 2014, about 145,000 miles on it. About 3,000 miles ago, I had an inspection done. I checked out my front brakes. Driver's side, smooth as a baby's butt. The passenger side, though, had all kinds of grooves in it, about 0.2 inches deep in some places, all rough. I'm wondering, why the difference between the two brakes?
It could be a bad slack adjuster, so that your brakes aren't applying evenly, which is a very, very common thing. So now if you picture one brake shoe sitting much closer to the drum when the brakes aren't applied and the other one having a much bigger gap, as you apply the brakes, only one of them is activating first. So it's doing the majority of the braking on that axle. So it's going to wear out first and it's going to wear out more. And then all we have to do is have a slight imperfection anywhere, the drum or the shoe, and that imperfection gets transferred to the other part. So it's not unusual really to see very different wear patterns like that.
Wouldn't I feel that during my braking?
Not necessarily, because remember, when you're going down the road, you've got braking on, just had to do the math here, you know, five.
all five axles, right.
Yeah, you've got five axles. So any mix of, you know, this one's a little stronger on this. You know, sometimes on a steer axle, if it's really out of whack, you can feel it because you feel it in the steering wheel more so. But not necessarily. And then the other thing is it sometimes it happens so gradually that if you drive that truck every day and this happens a little bit, you actually get used to it.
That could be it. Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you, not so much my driving pattern changed, but I recently started teaching students. And obviously their driving patterns are all over the place. And I'm wondering if that contributed to the situation, because I hadn't noticed anything last fall, but recently I was like, okay. And I went as far as to switch them out just to make sure I was covered.
That could be it. And you know, one of the things, in fact, we're going to be doing it over the next couple weekends with Safety Week coming up. We partnered with a new company that makes a great brake product. It's a visual brake indicator, so you can just do a quick walk around and see lots of different things. Brake adjustment, if the slack adjusters are working properly, if the brakes are working properly, if anything's hanging up. And it's just such a well-engineered, simple product, nothing real complicated. But we're going to be talking a lot about that, because the number of vehicles on the road with brakes out of adjustment it's over half every year when we do Safety Week. It's always the number one violation. And most people in the industry today have just been kind of brought into the industry believing that automatic slack adjusters take away the need for making sure our brakes are adjusted properly. I don't want to say manual adjustment, because we shouldn't be manually adjusting these slack adjusters except under emergency conditions, but we should be making sure that the automatic slack adjusters are working properly, and many of them aren't. And if they're not working properly, our brakes are going to be wildly different and way out of adjustment many times.
So this product is something you're offering it now in your store? Is this something I could find out about, or how do I find out about this?
It will be up within probably a week of right now, which means maybe by the time, you know, they hear this show, it will be within a couple of days. So we're getting ready to release it. This is a company I've actually worked with for about 6 years in the background. We brought out a product with them about 5 or 6 years ago that was fully electronic and digital, so that every time you stepped on the brakes up in the cab, you had indicator lights on every single wheel position. And you would get green, yellow, and red that would show you the adjustment of each wheel position on the indicator lights. If a brake hung up, there was an indicator for that. I thought it was a fantastic system. I had it on my trucks. My drivers loved it. The product just did not do well. It was fairly expensive, a little complicated to install and make sure that it was working properly all the time. But I love the fact that literally every time you stepped on your brakes, you got a visual indication of every wheel position and the adjustment on them. But the product just, it didn't take off. Most owner operators just aren't that interested in safety that they're willing to spend that kind of money. They felt like it wasn't that necessary. So the company also has this very, very simple product that is easy to install, quick visual when you do your walk around. So like I say, it's a company we've known for a long time. We love their products, and we just think now is the time that this one might take off.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I'll definitely keep my ears open for that one.
All right. Sounds great. Let's head off to North Carolina. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy. I have three things today. About 6 weeks ago, my wife fell over and she broke her leg. Well, I wasn't home. She went to the little emergency clinic in town, and they did an x-ray. Oh, you fractured your leg. We'll refer you to the specialist. So I get home, and we go to take her to the specialist, and she didn't have insurance. So get there, see the orthopedic guy. He says, yeah, it's fractured. It's nothing major. It's pretty simple, straightforward. We'll give you the boot to put on, go home and keep it elevated and all that stuff, and try and keep off it if you can. Okay. And I get up there, and I says, we don't have insurance, so I'm going to pay cash, and I'm going to pay you today before I leave. Oh, okay. Right. $167 was the total bill. Go back a month later to see the orthopedic guy, do x-rays, see the orthopedic. He's like, yep, you know, poked and prodded, and yep, everything's looking good. Carry on. $67. Got to go back in a couple of weeks. So the whole thing's only going to cost a few hundred.
Which is
this insurance crap is just annoying.
It is. And here's what I try to get people to understand about insurance. People, we've been brainwashed into believing that insurance is the best thing ever because you don't have to pay. And it's even worse because our employers have almost been forced to provide. Well, now they are. More than 50 employees, you're forced to. So now to the employee, it is free. The problem is nobody understands the cost to the system. Here's the simplest way I can explain this. That bill that for you, let's just call it $100 to make it easy. Go to the doctor, there's $100 bill. If you hand him $100, we're done. No other cost. Yeah. Let's even throw credit cards out of the mix for a second. So nobody even has to pay a credit card fee. You hand him cash. He gets $100. That's $100 to him. He doesn't have to pay anybody else. But if we run this through insurance, now the insurance company has to make money. The doctor has to hire somebody in order to process all the paperwork to go to the insurance company. That takes away from the profit. The insurance company has to hire somebody to process the paperwork and the claim and to make sure they're all legitimate. That takes money. And there are all these fees and everything gets added. So now in order for everybody to make the same profit, the $100 bill has to become $300 because of all this garbage that's in the middle. That's why insurance work. Insurance is for catastrophic events.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I had. But my insurance provider, they pulled out of Oklahoma. So now I have no insurance. So I guess I have to sign up for Obamacare.
Yeah, which is we're just heading down the wrong road completely. We need to be paying for our own medical expenses out of our own pocket, negotiating with our own doctors and hospitals, and we need insurance to cover the catastrophic events. But we've gone completely the other way. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to head right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Texas. Daniel, welcome to the program.
How's it going there, Mr. Rutherford?
Going wonderful. What's on your mind today?
A lot, thanks to you. The other weekend, I had talked to you about health. I had a couple health questions, and well, then my mind kind of went all over the place because you gave me numbers to play with, being 60 grams of carbs per day. So I started counting a lot. And for the thing that I'm on right now, I'm somewhere in a neighborhood of like 80 or so a day.
Okay. That's a good improvement.
What I'm doing right now is I had spoke to you once about this, the word you hate, the meal replacement deal. But I got to thinking, well, if 50 a day is better than nothing, even though 100 was my goal, well, if I do this, it's better than doing the exact same thing and eating the same unhealthy foods. And this would be a nice interim until I can find something that's healthier than this.
Absolutely.
And what I was wondering, I got to look at the paleo diets, and I went to look for farms in my area that had regular food that wasn't, you know, fed with grains and stuff like that. And it turns out, you know, not too bad of an area, which is, you know, cool. And I'm wondering, all the stuff that I saw as examples to cook is like as if you're living at home. So how do I make that something where I can just quick grab it, eat it? You know, I eat something small every couple hours until I can have a meal at the end of the day.
Well, there are a couple things here, and let me go back to the meal replacement, why I am not a fan of these programs, whether it, and there's hundreds of them out there. The problem is the foods are just not foods. They're so heavily processed. They're, and they make it look really good because they say, look, you're supposed to have this much of this and this much of this, and we do this perfect balance, and you don't have to think about it. But the problem is that the foods are just so overprocessed that we get no nutrition from them. They're just not healthy. Now, I know lots of people say, but I did it and I lost weight. Weight, again, I talked about this at the end of my last show. Weight is only one factor. We should be much, much more concerned about our overall health, not just our weight. Weight, if we get healthy, if we focus on being healthy and eating healthy, our weight will take care of itself. But if we focus only on our weight, we could be horribly unhealthy. I mean, things like the extreme gastric bypass surgery, yes, it's helped a lot of people lose a lot of weight, but I think it is a horrible thing to do. Now, I piss people off when I say that. They say it saved my life. I get that. But you, there are better ways to save your life and really create health, not invasive surgeries. And these meal plans are the same way. People say, but Kevin, you're just wrong. I did this and I lost a bunch of weight. I get that. But it doesn't mean you're healthy. In fact, you're probably not, because you're not getting real foods. You're not getting real nutrition. We've got to go back to eating foods as close to their natural state as we possibly can. You're talking about, you know, farms that grow organically, grass-fed animals, more wild animals. That's how we should be eating. And I will tell you that it is a huge challenge to anybody. It's expensive. It's time-consuming. There's no question. I am not saying this is easy. What I am saying, though, is once you understand it, it's simple. It's not hard to understand why this will work. But it's not easy. It's not easy if you live at home. It's really not easy if you live on the road. But I will also say that it can absolutely be done. I just spent 4 months on the road. Granted, I had an RV, but I really focused on what could I do if I were only in the truck, and it can still be done. Not quite as well, but if it will still be a huge improvement over the way most people are eating. So the one thing, and you talked a little bit about this, and you're on the right track. We can look at our diet today and how bad it really is. We can look at the perfect diet of saying, okay, I only eat grass-fed animals, small amounts, high quality. I only eat organic produce. That would be the perfect diet. The odds of us sticking to a perfect diet are slim to none, but it doesn't have to be all or nothing. And people do this all the time. They say, well, I can't do that on the road, so I'll just keep doing what I'm doing now. What we need to do instead is keep improving every little place we can. Even if it means you only get that grass-fed meal once a month, it's still once a month more than what you're getting it today. and then we just keep working. So, you know, people say, well, there's no place to shop on the road. I don't understand how anybody says that. There are amazing grocery stores. People say, yeah, but you can't get to them in a truck. Well, how do you think they get their food? They get deliveries by truck every single day, multiple times a day. I have no trouble getting to Whole Foods or higher end grocery stores that carry this kind of food. Many, many stores now, regular grocery stores, carry grass-fed beef, true pastured chickens and eggs, lots of organic vegetables. You know, I've talked about other foods that are easier in the truck, sardines, canned wild-caught salmon. Great alternatives to keep in the truck that requires no refrigeration, actually better for you than beef and things like that. So you can eat those things. We just recently started working with the produce company, Melissa's. They do specialty produce, and they are putting out a line of vacuum packed, totally prepared and steamed vegetables. They require no refrigeration and they last about 30 days in the truck. They have 11 different vegetables available now. So there are options out there. You've got to look for them. But the goal, the overall goal, without me getting too specific, is to eat as much of your food as close to its natural state as you possibly can.
Okay. And I got one more question for you. Now, I am, unfortunately, allergic to peanuts, stuff like that. So how do I can't quite remember, like almond stuff like that. I know almond is somewhere, something about not having peanuts in it, something about an amygdala or something like that. But how do I continue to get protein that way if I can't quite have all the nuts?
Well, nuts are good for you, but if you're allergic to nuts, now here's something else you may find. I'm not giving medical advice. You've got to, you know, peanut allergies are life threatening. One of the things One of the things they're finding is that once you get rid of the grains, the things we're not supposed to be eating at all, many of the other food allergies go away. It's not really natural for us to be allergic to those things. Those are foods that our body should be able to eat. There's no reason, biological reason, why we can't eat those. Many times what they find is your system is so overloaded with the grains that we are not supposed to be eating. They are toxic to us. We all have allergic reactions to grains. We just don't even realize it. Once you get rid of those and your system normalizes, many times other food allergies go away. But even if they don't, let's say you had to stay away from nuts completely. Protein is not all that hard to come by because the things I just mentioned, the sardines, the canned salmon, no refrigeration required, and they're loaded with protein.
All righty then. Now, you're sitting at the fat is more important to have that than like no carbs and the fat. Now this one dressing that I like to use now very much sparingly compared to before has got like 1 gram of carb in it. And I think it might've been sugar, like on the thing, it says less than one thing of sugar. And right. It's got like 11 or 12 grams of fat in there.
Pour that stuff all over your salad. Don't hold back. The fat is your energy source. Now, I do want people to watch dressings carefully, though, because many dressings are high in bad fats, and you want to look at what oil was used in this. So I need to take back what I just said.
Sure, it's not partially hydrogenated then.
That's step number one, but you also want to watch the vegetable oils, corn, soy. Those are genetically modified. That's the next problem. They're too high in omega-6s, and omega-6s are good for us, but we need a 1-to-1 ratio of omega-6 and omega-3, and the average American is getting 10 times more omega-6 than they are omega-3. So we've got to get them back in balance. So olive oil is the most common good oil you can put into a salad dressing. Very high in omega-3s, not genetically modified. So if this is a good oil, a good fat, eat as much of it as you want. The other thing on dressings, and you cleared this up, many of them are just loaded with sugar. This one has virtually none. That's what we want in dressing. High quality fat, low sugar. Olive oil, apple cider, raw apple cider vinegar, best dressing you could ever eat. Stick around, we'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I got an oil sample for you, and I'd like to pick your brain about as many other questions as you'll allow me after that.
Got it. All right. So let's take a look at the oil sample here. We've got a C12 cat. What year?
2000.
Okay. So I'm not surprised. 670,000 miles on the engine, about 17,000 on the oil sample. And how much oil do you have to add? How often do you have to add a gallon?
Well, it is a C12. I got a front cover leak, so about a gallon every 4,000.
Okay. So two things, and it's actually a little confusing. First off, this is a really clean sample. The engine is running well. We don't have any fuel dilution. We have virtually no soot. Those are good things. Viscosity is holding up nice. The base is dropping, and we do have oxidation. What that tells me, that along with the oil consumption, is most of your oil is not going out that front seal. Most of your oil is burning. And that just means the cylinders are in need of replacing liners, rings, pistons, that kind of thing. And it's not critical right now, but at a gallon every 4,000, you might be able to squeeze a year out of it. I wouldn't think much more than that. So you're looking at an in-frame within the next 12 months. And that makes sense. The base drops because we get the combustion gases down in the oil. They mix with the moisture and create acids. And then that the base is there to protect the engine against those acids. The more acid that's created, the more base has to get used. That's why our base goes down. The oxidation is telling us that the combustion gases are getting down there and oxidizing the oil. So it makes total sense based on what I'm hearing. The engine is performing really well. It's tuned well. Just the cylinder kits have quite a bit of wear.
Okay. And is the copper and iron related to that, or is that not really relevant?
It's not relevant. The copper is more than likely coming from an oil cooler. And there's really two places copper can come from. One we worry about, one we don't. The first one is the oil cooler. We don't worry about that one. The second one are the bearings. We really worry about those. But in order to get to the copper on the bearings, you have to go through the lead first. And you have virtually no lead showing up. So we know this isn't bearing wear. It's oil cooler, which we just ignore. So your wear metals all look great.
Okay. And then I heard you talking earlier with a guy about multiple trucks. I have multiple trucks from when I was just a fuel gauges user and they were just personal vehicles and company vehicles when I was a company driver. I'd like to keep that data, but I'd like to get it out of my profit gauges scenario. Is there any way I can do that?
Yeah. And rather than me try to walk you through it, because it's, you know, multi-steps and it's technical and it would just take me time, just give us a call. Call the number we put out all the time and we'll get that done for you. We can do it on the phone pretty quick.
Okay. And then can we talk about tire sizes specifically when you go, like I got tall tires now and I want to go to a low pro or possibly a single, but I'm not sure if there's a specific size that I should go for, like the most common or.
Not necessarily. What in general, this doesn't always hold true, but in general, the smaller the tire and the lower the profile, the more fuel efficient the tire will be. That's not always true, but trying to get to every specific tire, it's just not going to happen. So if we use the general rule, we're going to get the best possible outcome most of the time. So what I tell people is you should try to go to the smallest tire and the lowest profile your operation and specs will allow. Now, the one thing I don't worry about too much is RPM. Some people get all freaked out. Well, I'm already at 1350, and if I go to that smaller tire, I'm going to be at 1425. Yes, you will. But that RPM will make very little difference in fuel economy. Many times it can actually improve fuel economy, and the lower rolling resistance more than makes up for it.
Okay. And then as far as wheels, I have steel wheels. How big of a priority should I make converting those to aluminum? Should I get a radial runout gauge and just see, you know, how true the ones I have are? Is that a big thing to worry about if you look at used aluminum wheels?
Well, no. Aluminum wheels almost never have any lateral runout, and they have very, very little radial runout. So we don't really, I could measure them, but I've seen so few rims damage that bad aluminum. Now, steel, on the other hand, can be way out. So what I would say is if, and that's really the only consideration, weight doesn't really make much of a difference, not enough that we can measure it. I prefer aluminum, but if you had steel, there's so many other things we should be doing first. If you're not seeing any kind of crazy tire wear, then they're probably well within where we want them to be on both lateral and radial runout. If you do have some tire wear issues that you've been chasing, then I would say absolutely, let's get a runout gauge and check, because steel wheels can get out of round pretty quickly.
Okay. Last thing, I want to talk about CLA accounting. I don't currently have any kind of relationship with a CPA in my area. Would you recommend, and I know this is you'd be of a biased opinion, but I'll ask you anyway, would you recommend that I go straight to CLA to take care of all the tax stuff with the business, or try to create a local relationship?
You know, a lot of it depends on your goals. Now, I've been doing accounting for a very, very long time in the trucking industry. I own my own accounting company. I go way back to the early 90s. I sold that. We've looked around for, you know, really good alternatives. And after several years, we settled with CLA, and we love what they're doing so far. No question. We're very excited. They want to grow with us. We want to grow with them. So, yeah, and I am biased, of course. We put in all the work. We're happy with what they're doing. You also, it's pretty hard to go wrong if you find a good, you know, accounting firm or tax preparer locally. You go in, you spend time, you build a relationship. Now, when I say good, that's the key word. I mean, it's just like any business. There are excellent garages. There are horrible garages. Then there's a bunch of so-so in between. I certainly don't want horrible, but I also don't want to waste my time on so-so. I want to find people who really, really care about doing the best possible job. And those are the kind of companies we always seek out. If you found somebody like that locally, that would be fantastic. So if you want to take the time and build a relationship locally, find somebody who really cares about your business and will work with you, then that'd be pretty hard to go wrong. If you want to work with CLA, we've done a lot of the homework in the background, and we're very confident that you're going to be happy with them.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. And then do they just hand off the Schedule C and I'm on my own for personal, or do they...
No, they'll do the entire corporate. If you have corporate, they'll do the entire personal Schedule C, every schedule. If you have another business or a farm, whatever it is, they've got the people and the expertise to handle it.
Okay, great, Kevin. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's squeeze in a quick one here, and if I have to carry it through the break, we will. Let's head off to Indianapolis. David, it's your turn.
Hey, Kevin, how are you today?
Great. What can I help you with?
I've got a question for you. I am an owner-op. I run reefer loads, so my reefer is running most of the time. I had built a out of 1/0 welding cable and female leads, two pigtails for my truck battery, and then a 20-foot extension with clamps on it for my reefer battery. And I kept my idle time down this winter to 0%, which really increased my fuel mileage. My question to you is, why couldn't I do that with a large inverter and run a very small AC unit in my truck instead of going to the expense and the maintenance of a power pack and all that?
Let me put you on hold, and we will come right back and talk about that right after this break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with David in Indianapolis. So, David, there isn't any reason why you couldn't do that. I mean, you know, I think this is a wonderful idea. I don't know why more people with reefers aren't doing this. You've got that diesel engine running all the time. It's got to be running, and we can pull power from that thing. So, yeah, you can run in all. The great thing about electricity, even though it seems confusing because we don't always understand it, electricity is just math. I mean, so all you have to do is either do the reading yourself or find somebody who knows. Everything in electricity is math. We need this many amp hours. We need this many volts. We need, you know, this much to get an air compressor, an air conditioning compressor going. That initial start of a compressor takes a lot more juice. And then we know how much we need to keep it running. So this is all a formula that you can just work out. How much inverter do I need? You know, do I want battery backup on this and storage? But you could certainly run all that from the reefer. Now, again,
okay.
We also have to realize that the reefer itself is only really running an alternator. The alternator is what's supplying the power. We need to make sure that that alternator on the reefer is part of this math calculation.
Now, that was the question I had, but you've never run into anybody that's done this before, huh?
Actually... we worked with an APU manufacturer several years back. They were producing a fully electric APU. And I loved the idea. The batteries were still always the weak part in the system. But they had, as part of their system, you could put this fully electric APU in your tractor. and your truck's alternator would charge the batteries all day long. We had extra deep cycle batteries, and then you would run the air conditioner off those batteries. But they also had a connector that did exactly what you're talking about. They would run off the reefer instead. So, and that's how this guy got started. He pulled reefer for years and he did the same thing you did. And then he came up with all the, and he built a great system. It just wasn't working with us as a partnership for a couple other reasons. Nothing wrong with their product. I think our battery technology is still what's holding us back in cost and a lot of other things. But that's the one thing I would want you against. You either need to do the reading to figure out the formulas and the math or find somebody who can walk you through it. But we just want to make sure that that alternator is charging enough. And I don't want you to go put the system together and then find out it's not enough. We want to build a system that's going to work with the output you're getting out of that alternator.
Right, right. And that's what I was trying to figure out, but I guess I'm going to get to maybe an electrical supply or one of these guys that maybe can walk me through it and tell me what I'm going to need to power that thing. Because yep. Home Depot's got those very small AC units that are air conditioned 500 square feet, no problem.
Exactly. Yeah, this is a great idea. I think it's an excellent solution. I just want to make sure you've got the numbers right all the way through the system.
Well, it took my my fuel cost revenue to my fuel revenue to to revenue. It took it down 20% to 25% this winter, and last winter I was at 36%.
Yeah, that's outstanding. And again, I think it's the way you're doing this is great. I don't know why we don't use that resource more often. We've got that engine running all the time anyway. We can pull power off of it rather than create a different source. Let's go to Oklahoma. Carl, welcome to the program.
Kevin, thanks for taking my call.
What can I help you with today?
My fuel lines on my truck, can fuel lines cause you to lose as much as 2.5 miles a gallon?
That would be a stretch, I think. And if it did, we would probably see some pretty clear signs. Now, what we have seen is fuel lines just be one of a couple problems and they just show up at the same time. It takes something pretty drastic to lose 2 miles to the gallon. And if it were fuel lines alone, you would notice a real drop in performance and pulling power.
Okay. Well, I've done improvements on the truck and it's like there's some little invisible guy that gets up under there and knocks a hole out in my fuel tank and then he wallers it out a little bit more when I do another improvement because my fuel mileage should be going up and it's not going anywhere.
Is it going down or is it just staying the same?
Well, I was right about 5 miles to the gallon and then I had some issues that I had done some stuff and I went back and corrected the problems and my fuel mileage is back up. It came back up around 6 and pulling a heavy load, it drops down low to mid 5.
Okay, so let me clarify.
How I drive it, I can't get better fuel mileage out of it.
Let's clarify a few things before we chase too many things.
Okay.
What are you using to track your fuel economy?
Well, I'm filling it up. I'm getting my mileage when I fuel from and going to the last fuel and calculating it on the calculator.
Okay, because one of the things I'm hearing, and it just might be the way you're telling it, but I've been doing this a long time. You're using about, and you're using really round numbers. You say, well, I get around 5 and then I got up to around 6.
I don't track every single.
There's your problem. I don't want you to go spending money or chasing this down until we get really clear and accurate on the numbers. And what I mean by that is I would like, you know, we use fuel gauges for a reason. We designed it the way we did for a reason so that I could say in the last 30 days, every mile, every gallon, the average, and average is one number, not a range. People say, well, my average is 5.2 to 6. No, it's not. That's a range. I want an average. In the last 30 days, every gallon, every mile was 5.32. That is a very accurate number. During that same 30 days, my best fuel mileage was 6.41 and my worst was 4.68. Now we have an average and a range, and they're very accurate. Then we could go in and look at every individual fuel up and say, okay, this one, this happened, but you were also, because we can take notes and record all this information, we could say, well, we understand why it happens because you were on a tight schedule that time and you had to go 4 miles an hour faster. So that explains the difference there. This one, we made some notes and we had this horrible headwind the whole time and it was only 22 degrees that day. That's the kind of information we need. Otherwise, you can waste a lot of money and a lot of time trying to figure out what's working and what isn't.
Okay.
So it costs nothing to really track this accurately with those numbers, and we will gain so much knowledge and so much perspective. But if we just take the shotgun approach, well, let's buy this, or let's go spend some money on this, or let's try this, but we're not tracking it. Like I said, I just watch people waste a lot of time and money. There's a very clear order that we attack fuel mileage. The first one is we have to be tracking it really accurately, like I just talked about. Now, the good news is it's so simple on fuel gauges. While you're standing at the pump with a smartphone, your entry is done before you finish pumping. I mean, you've got everything in except the final gallons. When you click off the pump, you enter that one number, you're done. Literally, it doesn't take 10 seconds out of your day, because you do it all while you're standing there waiting for the fuel to pump anyway. So it takes no time out of your day. And then we have all this really clear, accurate information. Second step is to make sure the truck is functioning properly before we start spending money on modifications. Now, look, I love modifications. It's how we make our living around here. But I want people to do this right because I want them to see the results from the modifications, and we know they will. So then you've got to make sure it's running right. Charger, cooler test, oil sample, those two things, and then call me back. With that information, I will get your fuel mileage up, I promise. Thanks for joining me. I'm all out of time. I've got to get out of here. Be safe. Be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rothenberg.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.